Yes, sir. How
All
you
right,
doing,
cool.
man?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great.
Sounds good. All right, what's going on, guys? Today I have Michigan State freshman, soon to be basically sophomore power forward Julius Marble joining me. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Just got done with a workout. I had to hop on with my boy.
Appreciate you, man. But is stuff opening back up for you guys in Texas or not really?
Well, we're not quarantining anymore. They're allowing us to go outside a little bit. We got to keep our distance, though. Certain, you go to certain restaurants and pick up food still, but can't really go anywhere and do too much right now.
Yeah, it's how it, because I'm in Florida too, so it's kind of the same way with us. But yeah, for sure. So let's get into it. So obviously when you were getting recruited, I checked to make sure. And Michigan State offered you, like, I think it was February 14th, and you ended up committing on March 9th or 10th, so not very much longer. So what ultimately led you to deciding to commit to Michigan State, and how was your recruitment like, the whole process?
Well, what led me to, commit was, the fact that they were following me, since like December. I had Coach Garland come see me for a couple games, and he was recruiting me pretty heavy. And, throughout that time, he was telling me, it could open up for me. They weren't, too high on me because they had other guys that they were trying to pursue. But if I stuck around and, stayed patient, that, the offer would come around and I'd have the chance to commit. And then around February, Coach came down to see me, and we did a little private workout. And then, it was just crazy because you dream about, those workouts and meeting those, Hall of Fame coaches and Tom Izzo's in my, high school gym. And it was just insane. So, he offered me right then, and I had other offers too. I had Oklahoma State, TCU, Illinois, Boston College were the main ones that I was really looking at towards the end. But ultimately, what led me with MSU was when I went on my visit that weekend. It was the Michigan game for the regular season title, and it was just electric. I love Spartan Nation. They showed me a lot of love that weekend, and it showed me that home was Michigan State for me.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. So growing up, were you obviously you probably weren't a Michigan State fan. So what team were you like, I guess not diehard, but who was your team growing up in Texas?
In Texas, early on, always rooted for the home team. I used to root for Texas a lot. As I got older, it became like less of Texas and more just, anybody, who's w willing to recruit me. I wasn't too much of a, specific person. People are gonna hate me for this. I was a Duke fan at one point, and that's long gone now, obviously. But I was a Duke fan, but. Not, I really didn't have too much of a team when I was younger. I was more, I had a, I probably rooted for football a little bit more than basketball when I was a kid. So,
That's cool. But so obviously, yeah, you just finished your freshman year. Obviously, it didn't end the way we all thought. But what do you think your favorite thing was about Michigan State thus far that you weren't expecting it, you know what I mean, to be?
yeah. As far as what is like, overall life or like basketball wise.
Just anything, honestly.
Well, likewise, I didn't realize how many people were really, attending Michigan State like that, and the amount of freedom I had. It was a big deal for me. I didn't really use it to my advantage at first. I was definitely poor with time management, and then later on, when the season came around, it helped out a little bit more as far as getting a schedule and being able to do certain things as far as go to practice, get a workout in, go to tutoring and stuff. So, at first, it was really hard to adjust to, college life, but I started to get the hang of it towards the season and towards the end of the season, really.
And what about for basketball wise? Like something that I guess was better than you thought it would be.
I realize how good everybody is. When you get to that level, everyone tells you, if you make it to that level, you're in the top, 1-2% in high school basketball. But once you get to college, you're at the bottom of the totem pole. And that was a big deal for me because I was the man in high school, the main guy, and now I'm back here, 12th man, 12th, 15th man. I have to work my way back up, and that was a big deal for me. But I've always worked for everything in my life. I've never, nothing's been handed to me ever. So it was a great challenge for me this year to battle against X and Markey and Thomas and Malik and all those guys. And it was a big learning year for me.
It's funny that you say that because I remember like people used to joke me like the walk-ons like Connor George and them they're like great players and it's funny you say that because now I'm starting to realize like everyone basically is a great player on the team. But
oh yeah.
Obviously the next one I have to ask, a lot of people are telling me, you know, ask it. So how brutal are practices with Coach Izzo? And what's the best Izzo practice story you got?
How brutal? It was extremely brutal compared to high school, obviously. It was a huge step up. You got this dude yelling at you the whole practice. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You can do it. You know, you're getting yelled at. That's just how he is. That's how he operates. But it's all love, though. You know, it's all correction. It's all to help you become a better player. And it took me a minute to realize that. At first, I wasn't taking it well, but I felt like towards the end of the season, I started taking what he was saying as criticism and using it to help out my game. And I think the best Izzo story I got was probably the first time he chewed me out. We was practicing. I was, you know, messing up on defense. I was in the right spot, this and that. And, you know, he was like, you know, you're playing soft, you know. You look like the Dallas Cowboys out there, because he knows I'm a big Cowboys fan. And, you know, that one kind of hurt. He kind of pissed me off. But that was probably the funniest story I had all year.
That's funny. So, obviously, yeah. What are you doing to prepare for next year? I know you just said, you know, stuff is opening back up, but, you know, when it was closed, what have you been doing to, I guess, you know, work out? Do you have a gym in your house? Or, because obviously, like, some, you know, in a month or so, usually you guys would report back and work out for summer camp, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been lifting as much as I can. I have a weight bench outside and curls, and, you know, I have some weight training I could do here. I've been, getting in the gym every now and then. It's not consistent, and, you know, it's not technically open, so I haven't been able to do it the last couple of weeks because they've been a little more strict on it. But I've been, you know, today I did a track workout. I was outside running, doing sprints, you know, doing anything to get me better, to give me an advantage, because, you know, I need to take a big step this year as far as in my game. And, you know, I got to use this off season and this time off where, you know, no one's really working like that to get better.
Yeah, and that was my next question for you. So what do you anticipate your role being next year? I'm not asking you to say, like, you know, oh, if I'm the start, but, like, obviously, you know, if Tillman doesn't come back, does the staff want you to maybe switch to the five, or are you set on the four? Is that, like, what your, I guess, plan is for next year?
The plan next year, yeah, four or five, anywhere I'm needed. That's what it was for me last year, but this year more so because it's a little more open. Like you said, if X decides not to come back and, you know, pursue the draft and pursue his dream, he decides to do that, then, yeah, it'll be a little more open for me to do the four and five. You know, I want to take the leap up in minutes. You know, I just want to get more minutes. And if he needs me at four, then I'll do that. If he needs me at five, I'll do that as well. But the biggest thing for me is to get minutes and, you know, to show everyone that I can play basketball.
Yeah, exactly. And as far as the five goes, like, who is, like, you know, I'm not asking you to say who's going to start, but who, I guess, I don't know how to say this. Obviously, you and Kith, you played the five as well. Like, is that going to be the battle for the five, I guess, if he's not there? And obviously, you guys have Sissoko coming in too.
Yeah, if we're being truly honest, I couldn't tell you what the battle is for the four and five. Tommy's more of a five than a four, and Marky's coming back. So, you know, I think Marky, you know, that'll probably be his spot, depending on his progress. But also, it could be my spot. You know, it's really up for grabs the way the coach has made it seem. It just depends on, you know, this offseason of training and how we progress, and as far as our mental side of the game, learning plays and learning sets and being more comfortable with that, as well as being in the right spots defensively, do all of that. I think whoever is the best man at, you know, knowing the plays and knowing where to be on the court is going to be the guy that starts and gets the most minutes. And, you know, it's out of us three and as well as Mahdi, you know, it's up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's why I was curious what you had to say. But as far as, like, recruiting goes for college, or high school, I'm sorry, but, you know, like, you're in the game, you're playing. Do you remember the first time you ever looked up and you saw one of the coaches in the stands and you were like, you know, like, damn, like, I might actually have a chance at making this?
As far as, like, Michigan State specifically?
I mean, just any school in general for, like, high school.
I think the time where I realized I could I can, you know, play basketball in college was when I got my first offer. It was with Pepperdine, and they saw me a lot my sophomore year. throughout the live period. And, you know, they made it seem like, you know, we'll see. But, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't doing anything crazy. And I think I had one game at AAU. I scored like 45. And the coach, he like, I think he left like probably like 3 minutes left in the game. And then he realized, he said at that moment, he realized he was going to offer me. But he didn't tell me that till like June. So when he told me about that moment, that's when I realized, you know, I could really take this to the next level. And, you know, this is, you know, I'm getting my first offer as a sophomore. Not many kids are, you know, the privilege of having that. And when I realized that, when I knew that, you know, I could take this to the next level if I keep working.
Mm-hmm. And for practice, like, wise, who would you say on the team is the most competitive player in practice?
Most competitive? That's me. if we're being truly honest, I'm the one that talks the most noise. I'm pretty sure you can get a couple guys to back me up on that. Malik will tell you. Marky will tell you. I'll talk a lot of mess. Other guys, they'll talk some too, but you know, I'm the one that gets it going. I'll talk to X early. You know, you ain't gonna do this to me today. You gonna have a long day in the post. You know, you're not built like this, stuff like that to get them going. And, I love it too. I love when guys, you know, score on me and that, you know, they're showing me that they're working and that they're good. You know, that lets me know I got to work and get better too. You know, if I'm talking, I'm at the back it up. And I love when guys are able to compete with me and, you know, show me what they got. So, you know, I'm definitely the most competitive player out there.
My guess would have been Tillman, honestly. That's the only other one I could have thought of, but that's funny you say that.
Yeah.
But the last thing I had to ask you was, obviously I asked you, you know, what you're, you know, preparing for next year, but what would you say the one thing where you're like, this is what I got to improve on? Is it your jumper, whether it's pick and roll? What do you think that one thing is that you're trying to improve from your freshman year to sophomore year?
I think the number one thing that coach talked to me about, and I started to realize it too when I went back and looked at film, was my conditioning and like as far as being in the right spots offensively, because sometimes I looked a little lost. But it was a big deal for me. You know, I would sit down for like, the whole first half, and then I get minutes some in the second half, and I have no clue what we're doing. I try and figure out what's going on, and it's, you know, really loud, everyone's screaming. And offensively, I felt like I was a little bit of a burden to the team. And, I told coach about that and how, you know, I felt like I needed more reps with the main team to get comfortable with that. And, you know, we talked about it, figured it out, and that's going to be a big thing this summer. Hopefully we, you know, get to go back soon so I could, you know, improve on that. But yeah, those are the two main things I feel like I need to work on.
Yeah. I just felt like it wasn't even you, just like behind X, like all year long, you guys were trying to find like who that, I guess, next center was. And it just never, you know, like you're saying, no one ever knew who it was.
Yeah.
But yeah. And the last thing I have to ask you was, and I already probably know the answer, but I'm going to ask it. What was your favorite game you played all year? Like just environment wise, whatever, like the game you enjoyed the most.
Favorite game or, man, that's really tough. Cause I have multiple games I loved. I loved the Kentucky game cause I got to play against my boy, Tyrese Maxey. I played him a lot in high school. And, you know, it's cool to play him again. My first game in college, I played him at Madison Square Garden. It was insane. Also, the Duke game was a huge game for me. You know, like I said, I was a Duke fan, and now I'm playing against them. Coach K is on the other side. It was pretty cool to see that, too. And Maui, probably Maui was, probably up there, too. So I picked three of them, my bad. But
you're good.
You know, it was a lot of great moments this season. It was a great season. Maui was probably one of my favorites because I grew up as a kid. I just watched the Maui Invitational with my dad. That was one of the things he talked about when he was a kid. He wished he played in the Maui and he never got the chance to. And the fact that I got the chance to my freshman year in college, that was a big deal for him. And he was very proud. And, you know, I was extremely excited to be in that moment.
I thought you were going to say the Michigan one at home because of all those memes they had of you.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, that one was – I forgot about that game. You know, well, they kind of did me dirty on the memes, but, I mean, we're going off that game. I had to show them a little something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's funny you say that. And with Tyrese Maxey, Jesus, dude. I mean, he played the game of his life that game, which didn't help.
Yeah.
But – that's really all I had to ask you, man. I really appreciate you doing this. Yeah. It's always hard to get the basketball guys on, but, you know, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this.
No, yeah, no problem. You know, I had to, you know, I had to look out for you. You're always showing love on my Instagram posts and, you know, showing love on your account. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. And I'm obviously going to post this, hopefully get you to 9K like I told you. And then, yeah, I'll post a link on Twitter if you want to retweet it or something.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you later, man.
All right. Appreciate you.
See ya. Yep. You too.
Spencer.
What's up, Paul?
How you doing?
How you doing, man? Not bad myself. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I'm adjusting.
Good to know. Well, on that note, guys, today we have ESPN National Basketball Director for High School Basketball and NBA Draft Analyst Paul Biancardi joining me. What's going on, man?
Adjusting to being isolated and trying to make the most of every day by being productive work-wise and spending a little bit more time on myself, trying to get myself in a little better shape, probably walking more than I've ever walked in my life.
Yes, I see your Instagram. You're always interviewing high school recruits on your podcast. And I actually listened to that one you did with Tipton Edits, which was
very cool. Joe's an up-and-coming guy in the business, and I've known him for the last 3 or 4 years.
That's very cool. So, yeah, let's get right into it. So the first thing, you know, talk a little bit about your background. I saw in your Twitter bio you actually coach at a few D1 schools, which I did not know.
Yeah, that's really, Spencer, I'm a coach at heart. I played Division III. I played for a guy by the name of Tom Thibodeau.
Okay.
And we know he coached the Bulls in Minnesota, and I believe he'll coach again in the NBA. Longtime assistant coach as well. So that propelled me into coaching at Division III. I went from Division III to a volunteer spot at Boston University, where I volunteered all my time just to be in the profession. And then I went from a volunteer to a graduate assistant at Boston College, got into the Big East in the early 90s when it was maybe the best conference in the country. And I spent 7 years at Boston College, went to an Elite Eight and won a Big East championship, transitioned over to Ohio State, Big Ten country. Spent 6 years there, a couple of Big Ten championships and a Final Four. Became a head coach at Wright State. And after I finished that, I became an assistant at St. Louis University in the Atlantic 10. And then I had an opportunity to get this job with ESPN and come in on the ground floor. They were looking for a former head coach or a high major assistant who could rank, grade, evaluate, and understand, you know, the players of today at the high level. So I had that background. And it also allowed me to do high school games on TV as an analyst, do college games as an analyst as well, which, you know, my heart was in the college game. But with the high-level recruiting, the evaluating over time, they thought I was a good fit for the job. I thought I was a good fit. And it got in, took off, never looked back.
Yeah, with the recruiting as well, because I remember you on TV watching, you know, Ben Simmons when he was in high school, you were doing the games. But I saw Tipton Edits post, and he was saying how Cade Cunningham was like 144th in the country to all the way up to number one. So how do those evaluations work? Like, do you go strictly off film or?
Well, no, I do a thorough job. I have a good group that helps me out. But, you know, it's detailed. It's well thought out. It's we're not throwing darts at a dartboard and see what sticks. And I had a chance. I don't rank anybody unless I see them myself. And with Cunningham, I had a chance to see him at Montverde early on. And, you know, a lot of guys are out of the rankings and then they make their way into the rankings. And sometimes guys are in the rankings early because of some physical measurables or some great potential, but they never pan out. So they slip and slide down. Some guys make their way up slowly, incrementally. It's all different ways guys get into this prestigious, I call it a prestigious list. Now, it's not the end all be all because the guy who's number 101, 102, those guys are really high end players. But with any list, you have to have a cutoff point, and you got to figure out who should be on and who just missed it. But there's some great players in the country. just for your knowledge, there's about 1,000 Division I high school kids every year that end up going D1. We only rank 100. So that's an elite list.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, there's 900 guys that go play D1, and so many have great careers. They become all conference. Just because you're not ranked doesn't mean you can't have a great career. Doesn't mean you can't play at the next level. It just means those guys are ranked, and those guys mm-hmm. are very good right now. They have a proven track record, and or they have enormous upside in the game still.
Yeah, speaking of the rankings again, obviously Michigan State finished with two top 100 prospects in 2020 with A.J. Haugerty and Mati Sissoko. And then a lot of fans are wondering, you know, like I asked you about Kareem Main. I know he's still in the draft process, but do you see him withdrawing from that? And if so, how good of a chance do you think?
Well, I think his intention is to, you know, go into the NBA. I have not heard anything different from all my sources that he's thinking about going to school. Now that could change because we don't even know when the NBA draft is going to be. This is a strange year. Obviously, it's a strange time in our world. So it changes the dates on deadlines. It changes everything. So some guys could, you know, decide to go to college in September, the last minute, because we don't even know when the draft is. So we don't even know the NCAA date, the cutoff point where they have to either stay in or pull their name out. And that's usually done by in the past. It's been 10 days after the combine. Because the NBA, the NCAA felt that, hey, 10 days after the combine, you have a great idea whether or not what your position could be in the draft. So it gives you that 10-day grace period to come back to college. Don't know when that's going to be, but right now his intention is to stay in the NBA draft.
Yeah, and with a lot of players, I didn't know, like, you know, like there's some players like Aaron Henry, some worry, you know, he might leave, which he probably wouldn't get drafted. But, you know, the middle pack guys like him, do you see them, you know, staying in the draft? Or do you think a lot of those guys?
I think if you're a middle pack guy and you have any question marks at all, I think you come back and answer those question marks because, you know, the draft people aren't going to take chances with middle of the road guys. Those guys will go undrafted. And then it's a really long haul to even get a chance at a G League team. This is not the bright lights and the flashiness that it appears to be. You have 60 spots in the NBA draft. Right now we have, I'm guessing I was told last, about 150 underclassmen that have declared. Now, a lot of those guys are going to take their name off the board, and I hope at least 100 of them do. Because then you have some seniors, and then obviously you have the international kids. Don't forget, there's guys in the G League that are trying to move their way up. There's two-way guys that are hoping to make a roster. You have to time this just right. And if you're at your peak right now, then maybe you have to stay in the draft if you're at your peak. If you have a chance to improve your body, improve your game, improve your IQ, and if you're that good, I think you should go back to college and really try to improve your stock and then help your college team win. I think a perfect example recently has been PJ Washington. You know, he could have went to the draft that first year, probably would have been a second round pick, but he upped his 3-point field goal percentage. He got in better shape, became a better defender, became somewhat of a leader at Kentucky, helped them to a very successful season. And now he's in the lottery. And so if you're that good and you can, you know, if you believe in yourself and you got a guy like, say, Tom Izzo, John Calipari, they know exactly what you have to do on the court to be an NBA player. So, you know, those are the type of programs that can take you and make you an NBA player if you have NBA talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100% agree. And that's some really good insight on that kind of stuff for the people that don't know. But next, let's get into 2020 on recruiting. So Michigan State's only offered 6 prospects, surprisingly, not counting Charles Bidako, or however you pronounce it, out of Canada, but 6 prospects in the United States. And the first one, obviously, Jaden Atkins, 4-star out of Farmington, Michigan. Doesn't have the biggest offers as of yet. I think he would have probably blown up more if they would have had the summer ball. But where do you think Michigan State stands with
him? I think they're in good shape with him. But I also think Michigan's in real good shape, as well as Iowa and Missouri. Now, I think you're exactly right, Spencer. Akins is a kid who, if he played this summer, you know, he would blow up. I hate to use that term, blow up, but I think that he would make his mark. Mm-hmm. I think that he would establish himself in this class. And, you know, I think he'd work himself into being a top 100 type player. He has the athleticism. He has the stroke. Got a little bit of speed. And I like the way he can find the guy off of dribble penetration. You know, he's a playmaker. He's a shot maker. Of course, he's got to get stronger. He's got to become a better defender. Every high school kid has, you know, so many areas that they have to improve in. But I think he's a guy who likes the ball. And if you like to play and you really love to play, you know, the summer is your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And Michigan State's obviously going to need a point guard in that class with the potential Watts leaving. Not knowing what, obviously, Foster Lawyer hasn't really panned out. So that's going to be a big need. Next, obviously, Max Christie. I'm not sure ESPN has him ranked, but I know, you know, 247 and that has him top 25, five-star out of Illinois. He recently said he was looking to commit before, you know, the start of high school season. So where do you think Michigan State stands with him? I know he's, like, you know, has a lot of schools, but we were the last school he visited before the shutdown.
Well, yeah, Max Christie is 14 on our big board in the class of 2021. Mm-hmm. Michigan State, I know they've put a lot of time into him, as you mentioned just recently with the visit, but they've been down to his school several times. I think you got to fight off Northwestern, as simple as that sounds, but I think they're making a hard charge. I think Duke is very interested. Cal is in there from the West Coast. Illinois has done a good job. Florida has made a mark, and DePaul is lurking around, as well as Virginia. So I think Michigan State, though, in my mind right now, would be one of the favorites for Max Christie.
Okay. So would you list them as a leader?
I would. That's just on my gut. I have no facts to back that up. I just know they've put a lot of time into him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next up, if I pronounce his last name wrong, guys, sorry. So Charles Badako, he's from Canada, five-star center. Where do you think – I mean, recently someone out of Rivals, I think Corey Evans listed us as a leader. I was kind of shocked seeing how many centers we have on the team. Obviously, Duke's in the mix as well. Do you see Michigan State having a good shot at him? Yeah,
I think that'd be in the mix
with him.
I think Matty Sissoko, you know, big, strong center,
mm-hmm.
really athletic kid, part of their freshman class. He could have a good freshman season and be good enough to get drafted. So I think if you're Michigan State – I think you need a point guard and a big in this 2021 class. And obviously you need a wing. But, I think they're involved with him. But, you know, when you look at his recruiting, I know Alabama is in there tight. Arizona State has some ties. You know, a lot of these kids in 2021, Spencer, they're going to commit late. They're going to wait and see who's offering. And the coaches got to get out and see these guys a little bit more. This is going to be a late signing class, in my opinion. And just to get back on Max Christie for a minute, the one thing I do know is Max Christie and Patrick Baldwin are very close. Now, Patrick Baldwin, as you know, is one of the top players in the class of 2021. You know, we have him as the number three player in the ESPN 60. Great shooter out of Milwaukee. You know, him and Christie are tight. There is some rumblings that they may look to go together. That doesn't always pan out, but keep your eye on that.
Yeah, and I forgot, like you just mentioned, they were saying Baldwin was pretty interested in Duke.
Duke and Baldwin are really tight. I think Michigan has made a big mark with Baldwin. Northwestern is going to be in the hunt because Dad played there. And, you know, you never know if Dad becomes on staff at Northwestern. That can always change things. Like, you look at USC. You know, they hired Evan Mobley's dad years ago. Now, Patrick Baldwin Sr., obviously the head coach at Milwaukee. But you just don't know what's going to happen in the world of recruiting. And Northwestern, I think, would be a viable option for Pat Baldwin.
And it's funny you keep mentioning Northwestern because I know a guy that, you know, films for Ball's Life and all that. And he keeps telling me, you know, Northwestern, don't sleep on them. They got Roper, the four-star, the other week. He even told me, you know, Atkins is very well considering them, they're working really hard.
Chris Collins is a tireless recruiter. I mean, don't forget, you know, all the work he did at Duke. He made a lot of inroads. He made a lot of relationships. He's done a really terrific job at Northwestern. It's a hard job to win at consistently. And he's working at building relationships. Mm-hmm. He is not taking no for an answer. He's putting a lot of time into all these good prospects.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And obviously the question everyone asks me every day on Instagram, Amani Bates recruitment. So first off, what do you think the chance of him reclassifying to 2021? And if he does reclassify, you know, do you see Michigan State as a viable option?
Well, I think there's a chance to reclassify always if you're a high level player, because a lot of these guys, you know, see themselves as potential one and done guys. So they want to get to college quicker to take a shot at the NBA draft a little faster. With that said, Imani loves being a kid. He loves being in his grade. You know, talking to him and the dad over the years, they're not rushing the process. And I personally like that. He dominates, you know, his age mm-hmm. group. He plays up. He obviously dominates that as well. But at this time with the pandemic, nobody's playing basketball. So a lot of kids are saying, I'm just going to take classes, and you know what? I'm going to reclassify and get my schoolwork done. This way I can go to college sooner. So I think in the class of 2021, we're going to see a couple more guys reclassify to 2020. We had Christian Lander do that just recently. We knew about that. Are there some other guys in 2021 that mm-hmm. may make the jump? Can Imani Bates, you know, reclassify to 2021? Absolutely. If he's taking more classes during this spring and summer when he can't play ball, I think it's a viable mm-hmm. option. And also, I can tell you this. I was in Atlanta at the EYBL in April, last April. I was there at 9 a.m. to watch Bates. In the front row mm-hmm. was Tom Izzo and his staff at 9 a.m. watching Bates. So I would tell you this. They are working extremely hard on Bates. Because at that time they talked about the one and done rule going away, but nothing became concrete. And now you hear no discussion of the mm-hmm. one and done rule going away. I think the pandemic has put things like that, you know, to the back burner, because the NBA is trying to figure out, you know, when their season's going to resume. Then when are they going to have a draft? Then what mm-hmm. about next year? So I think the one and done is going to stick around a little bit longer than people think. And Bates, you know, will mm-hmm. have an option to go to college, or he can go to the G League if that's something that interests him. But I got to tell you, I can't think of anybody more than Michigan State that's put in more time with Imani Bates.
Exactly. The only other school I would say would be, I don't even know Michigan, but I know Kentucky was interested, but I'm not sure.
Well, I know Kentucky's very interested in him, and they put time into him. But I can tell you this, when John Beilein was at Michigan, John decided not to, you know, go after Bates because he felt that the one and done rule would happen, and he didn't want to waste his time. He wanted to recruit kids that he felt that really wanted to go to college or had the chance to go, and that was a smart mm-hmm. decision in some ways. John ended up going to the NBA anyway. Now, if Juwan Howard has jumped into the race, which I'm sure he has, he's behind Michigan State right now. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up, you know, the one and done rule being pushed back potentially. But what we didn't talk about, and I know, you know, I'm very curious to know, is the G League new implement with obviously Jalen Green getting paid $500,000 to go play over there. A few other players, obviously Isaiah Todd decommitting from Michigan. Do you think you're going to see a lot more 2021 prospects do the G League route? And obviously the one and done, I think I'm more concerned with the G League route, because the one and done, if it happens, you know, it happens. But the G League is really interesting. I'm really interested to know.
Well, I think it's a terrific model for those that do not want to go to college, mm-hmm. that see themselves as NBA first round picks. They have an opportunity to get paid, get compensated very well, be in a situation where they can train solely for the craft that they want to be into, which is the NBA. Now, the G League, they're only making mm-hmm. those invites to guys that they believe or first-round draft picks, or at least second-round draft picks at the very worst. Because if you're the G League, you don't want to bring guys in from high school and then they don't get drafted. That's not a good look. So you go after your number one recruit. It's like recruiting in college. Okay, Jalen Green was their number one recruit. They got their number one recruit. And if they had their choice, they would take Cade Cunningham, they would take Evan Mobley, and then they would take Scotty Barnes. But, you know, the high-end money is slotted for one person. So they got that guy at $500,000. Then they have another slot, and they go down, you know, the list of rankings, and not just rankings, but who they feel can be a lottery pick or a first-round pick. And then, you know, the guys that they reach out to, they have to reciprocate and want to listen. If not, they go to the next guy. And then so they went to Isaiah Todd, and then they went to Deshaun Nix. And the money goes down in scale because they only have so much to give out. But you're looking at 3 to 5 guys every year that are going to be put on what they call an affiliate team. It's not a G League team. It's an affiliate team. So they're not in the G League standings. They're not in a G League town, like, say, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They are somewhere south of Los Angeles. They're going to come up with a facility. They'll have housing, and they'll do individual workouts in the morning. They'll have team practice in the afternoon. They'll do strength and conditioning, whether it's at night or early in the morning. It will be full-time training 7 days a week. And then they will play scheduled games against some G League teams. They'll play against some of the academy teams that are from India, China, over in Europe. They can play anybody they want to, really. So they're going to make their own schedule. Mm-hmm. I've been told about 15 games, a lot of scrimmaging, a lot of workouts, and they're positioning themselves, you know, to be in the NBA draft. And they're getting coached by, you know, a former NBA head coach, Sam Mitchell. So this was a really bold move and a smart move by the G League. They're setting these guys up for success. They're going to give them the resources. They're going to give them the coaches. They're giving them the salary. And now it's up to these guys to make it happen for themselves. That hurts the college game a little bit, but certainly not, you know, as much as people talk about. Sure, the college game would love to have Jalen Green, Isaiah Todd, Deshaun Nix. But the college game is going to thrive because it has Cade Cunningham, it has Evan Mobley, it has Scotty Barnes, it has BJ Boston. I mean, I can go on and on. This class of 220 is spectacular. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to have those guys in the college game, but those guys decided to go a different route. And so now they're in there, and hopefully they'll get drafted. I mean, Jalen Green, obviously, but those other guys get drafted and make a club because, you know, there's no going back to college now for those guys.
But see, I'm confused. Like, I don't know what this is really doing for the G League. Like, I know it's helping the players out, but then, like, I know Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes have that podcast, All the Smoke, and they were saying something like, you know, it's not really going to benefit the lower guys. But I agree with you with the college. I was going to ask you about
not at all. Won't hurt the game at all. But I mean, very, very little. Yeah. You're going to miss the Jalen Green. Look, James Wiseman played 3 games last year. College basketball was as exciting as ever. And I love James Wiseman. I thought he would have been a dominating force for Memphis. But he didn't play. And, you know, his name was brought up a few times. And after that, it was Obi Toppin, Luka Garza, you know, Vernon Carey, Cole Anthony. And Cole missed about 11 games. Anthony Edwards. I mean, there's so much talent in college basketball. With a Jalen Green and an Isaiah Todd, Deshaun Nix, there'd be more talent. But there's plenty of talent. Plenty of star power. And to answer your question, the G League, you know, it enhances the G League's profile when they can get high-level high school players to play under their umbrella because they're preparing these guys for the NBA. And don't forget, the NBA owns the G League.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I appreciate you for doing this, Paul, giving me great insight on all the stuff, all the recruiting, and all that.
All right, Spencer. Thank you for having me.